I want to thank this panel for being here. I love every one of these people very much. We're together all the time in different venues. It's kind of like the Gilligan's Island of orphan care in a lot of ways. It's a group of people who are working with one another all the time. And it's really amazing to see the kinds of ministries that are present here, each one very unique and different, and yet each one working together with the cause of adoption and orphan care. And what I would like to do before we actually start with the questions is if we could just kind of go through, and if you could just tell us a little bit about your area of ministry as it relates right now to orphan care or adoption or family ministry and what it is that you're doing right now. And let's start down here with Tara and kind of work our way over.
I'm Tara Melber, and I direct the Adoption and Orphan Care Ministry at Highview Baptist Church here in Louisville.
And Tara is awesome. Let me tell you, if you have any questions about starting an adoption ministry, go to our church website, highview.org. There's all the stuff that's there. And Tara is an amazing pioneer. I'll tell you, one of the reasons why Maria and I, when we first were called from Highview about going there, we walked into the lobby and looked around, and there was a huge map of all of the missionaries that had gone out from Highview Baptist Church, and a huge map of all of the children who had been adopted from North America and around the world in Highview Baptist Church, and that culture of adoption within that congregation. Lord used Tara Melber and her husband and a group of other very key people, as well as Kevin Ezell, in a major, major, major movement within that congregation. And about a year ago, I guess it was, we had a combined campus service, and a group of us were sitting up there on the platform, and all the kids from the church who had been adopted all came up onto the platform. So we had kids everywhere all over the platform with flags of the state or the country from which they had come, singing Jesus Loves Me. And I just kind of lost it and started crying there, realizing that most of those kids didn't really recognize the flag, but they all knew Jesus Loves Me. And that's an amazing thing, and God used Tara in a profound way. In that way, I'm very grateful to her. Mary Dell, tell us what's going on with you. And Mary Dell is one of those people that you are glad when you see her walk into the room for all kinds of reasons, a zeal and a heart for the Lord. And she also has been at this for a long time, dealing with the issue with issues of, for instance, trans-ethnic adoption for a very long time and pioneering that, and is able to give counsel with wisdom and insight in all kinds of ways, including... I was just listening to Mary Dell a little bit earlier today, talking about having someone ask her, how do I avoid making mistakes in this whole process? And she said, you're going to make mistakes. Relax and let God work as you walk in the direction that He's calling you. I'm really, really appreciative of that and of her ministry. Jed, tell us what's going on with you.
All right. I'm Jed Medefend. I serve with the Christian Alliance for Orphans. It's a coalition of about 70 different groups from around the country that are involved in foster care and adoption and overseas orphan care. And the really goal is twofold. One, to ignite the church on this issue. And then second, to equip Christians that want to serve orphans to do so effectively. And so, you know, if you're a church ministry that's just getting started and you want to be a part of a network of churches nationwide, we'd love for you to join the Alliance. At the end of April, we have a national conference summit up in Minneapolis where, Mary Dell is a board member and it's in her hometown. And, and it'll be really trying to equip with a particular focus on helping church-based ministries to start and grow. And so we just want to see that vision and serve churches in that process.
We all heard from Jed the first session here at the conference. I'm very, very grateful for the word that he delivered to us. Justin Taylor, tell us what you do and what's going on in your ministry.
Yeah, Justin Taylor, Vice President of Editorial at Crossway Books in Wheaton. And two of my connections here, two of our kids are Micah Fund babies through Maridel's influence, and Crossway publishes Dr. Moore's Adopted for Life book, which I think is the best book on adoption, so... happy for these connections here.
Justin also is known throughout the internet world as JT. He is the Uber blogger of the entire world, and he also is a really, really theologically brilliant and yet Christ-like, humble, missional presence, and I'm encouraged by Justin's presence every time that I'm around him, and encouraged by what the Lord's doing in his family and his church and his life as well as in his ministry, and really, really glad to have Justin be here to talk with us. Justin was really key for me through the process of writing the book, because he wasn't just working with me as publisher. We were kind of hashing this out as dads, back and forth. Well, what do you think about this, and what do you think about that? And I'm really, really grateful for that as well. Jason, tell us what you do.
Jason Kovacs, serve as the Director of Ministry Development for ABBA Fund. We provide interest-free loans for Christian couples, families, and provide help churches start adoption funds, and then provide resources and encouragement. Also serve on staff as a pastor at Austin Stone Community Church in Austin, Texas, and involved with Together for Adoption.
Jason is really critical in speaking to couples, as there are so many who are wondering, how in the world are we going to afford this? How in the world is this going to happen? And ABBA Fund has been really, really critical in speaking to that, and not only providing for families to adopt, but also encouraging and spurring on churches and other ministries to know how to do that. I'm really grateful for Jason to be here. Dan, tell us what's going on with you.
I'm Dan Kruver, and I serve with Jason Kovacs, and I direct Together for Adoption. And our primary focus is to mobilize the church for orphan care by equipping it theologically about vertical adoption and its implications for the complexities of the orphan care situation. So we have a website that we do that in an annual conference in the fall where we really try to focus on equipping the church theologically about adoption.
Tell everybody what your website address is.
It is one word, togetherforadoption.org, togetherforadoption.org.
Really, really good stuff on there, great materials. And those of you who are kind of just starting to think about this issue, you need to go and look at the articles that are written there. Those of you who are far along in your process and are needing to think this through to go to the next level, go there and check out the resources at Together for Adoption. Dan has really done a lot of brilliant work in bringing the theology of adoption together with the praxis of adoption. Really glad to have you here, Dan. And David, tell us about what's going on with you at Brook Hills.
Well, you guys heard from me for enough time this morning. I am just honored getting to interact with these brothers and sisters. They are experts in the practice of these things. I'm really scared that I'm going to say something wrong, like about, well, this is what you should do in adoption, and they're like, no, he's not been around the block very long.
We'll
so anyway, yeah,
island,
that's fine. That's fine. But I'm learning a lot in the process of trying to put a culture of adoption at the center of. I'm not at the center, the Great Commission at the center of the mission of the church, but certainly adoption is a part of that.
Okay. I want to go through the questions that some people have sent in. We can't get to every question, but there are some that are kind of representative. And just everybody jump in. We're kind of really informal here. We're not going to go person by person. But one person asks, how do I go about changing the culture of my church to be more adoption friendly? There are a lot of people who, there's nobody in a church who's going to be really antagonistic openly to adoption, or very few people. Most people are going to say, yeah, we think adoption is a good thing, but that's a very different thing from saying we want orphan care to be a ministry in our church. So how do you go about changing that if you're a layperson in a congregation, you don't have the pulpit every week, and you're wondering, what do I do? How would you advise this person?
Well, I encourage folks to just start simply by getting together with other adoptive families. Mm-hmm. It's a little harder when you're the only adoptive family, mm-hmm. but oftentimes there's at least one or two others, or even if you are the only adoptive family now, there's lots of families that are soon to be adoptive families. They might not know it, but they have an interest in adoption, and so I encourage folks to find those people, invite them into your home, and just start talking about adoption and doing a Bible study on biblical adoption and talking about practical adoption. And then I've seen and heard so many stories of one family in a church, you know, small church or big church, doesn't matter, where it just took one family doing it and sharing their life with others, and that just was a spark. And God used them as a catalyst to encourage many, many others. That's one simple way to start to move the culture in the church towards a culture that values adoption. Just get as many people in the church to adopt. Adopt as many kids as you can, too, and that changes it.
That'll change it.
I'd say don't forget the power of prayer, that a lot of times as Christians, we spend a lot of time talking more to each other than we spend talking to God about it. And it's pretty easy, relatively easy, to start a new program, but it's humanly impossible to change any sort of heart. Mm-hmm. So externally, there's ways, methods to change the external culture of your church, but to really change the heartbeat of the church, that's got to be a work of God. And so sometimes it's easy for us to neglect that crucial, hard ministry that doesn't require leaving the house. Mm-hmm. But it's not an easy ministry, but I think it's a required ministry to spend a lot of time asking God.
Mm-hmm. Pray that your pastor will adopt. Mm-hmm. That'll help.
Mm-hmm. That's a good one. I think, too, just living your life on a normal day-to-day basis as a conspicuous family, we obviously, people know that we've adopted because we have two children that don't look anything like us, but we don't treat our adopted children any differently than we do our biological children. They throw a green bean at family night supper just as quickly as, anybody else's kids, but just showing that life is normal. It's a normal family life to have, adopted children and biological children are together. And people will ask you a lot of questions, and to really pray that the Lord gives you a discerning heart and a spirit of grace when you're answering questions. Because really, it very much just takes your sweet little one endearing themselves to people within your church. And they come to love these kids, and they don't see these are the Melbourne's adopted children and these are not their adopted children. And so just by living out our daily life and being involved in our church and in our community and answering questions with grace, I think promotes an adoption-friendly church because people just love kids. So when they're rocking babies in the nursery, they begin to love those children and begin to see that their life is vastly different than it would have been had they remained in the circumstances from which they came.
I think it's helpful for usually couples that are interested in adopting. It's passion, and it's hard to be patient when you're passionate about something. So I think for me and how I counsel couples who are really passionate and impatient with not seeing that culture of adoption in their church work out as quickly as they'd like is to consider the time it took when God predestined us to adoption as sons until he sent Jesus to redeem us so that we might receive adoption as sons. And God did that at the fullness of time. So I think the perspective that God's working through history at the macro level to accomplish his adoptive purposes, he's doing the same on the micro level in our local congregation. So to continue to do these things and keep that perspective in mind.
That's a good word. And not to become divisive people in your impatience and creating a faction within the church. That's a very needed word. What would you say to, we've got a lot of pastors in the room today who are saying, what should I do? What would you say to a pastor who's starting to get concerned about orphans but doesn't really know what to do? I don't really want to start another ministry, he says. I can't really start another ministry. I don't really want to. I don't know what to do. What would your counsel be to him?
My encouragement would be to start with showing biblical, theological basis of this picture. I think that's invaluable. The kind of heart change that Justin referred to is something that only the Spirit of God and the Word of God can really bring about. And no matter, I think we have to be careful not to build some kind of ministry on. And I think it's good to expose people to the need of orphans around the world, but we can't show them enough pictures and give them enough statistics to really cause heart change. Only the Word and the Spirit can do that. Mm-hmm. And so to show that biblically, theologically, and then I think to platform good practical models of that. Mm-hmm. If there are families who have adopted, then I think to platform that, to show good stories to show the normalcy, the excitement, the passion that comes with this, and their reflection. I would add onto the end of that, I think the best model can be in your own life. I'm not saying that every pastor must adopt, but when a pastor walks through, the first year I was at Brook Hills was when we were walking through our adoption journey, and it just, we were open, vulnerable with our journey, writing and speaking and just sharing all the time, ups and downs, and I think that was pretty important.
Any other word for pastors? What are some mistakes you think that people make in getting an adoption ministry going? If you would say, if you're starting, here's a pitfall to avoid.
I think one of the biggest is letting the vision of what you ultimately want to achieve become a barrier to starting and taking the small steps that you can up front. You know, just talking with folks that now have very vibrant orphan ministries and culture within their church, you know, for many it's been a decade-long journey. And it came through a lot of routes. In some cases, it was kind of from the top down. A pastor or assistant pastor adopted or just really got a passion for Southeast Asia and started going on mission trips or whatever it might be. And it kind of trickled down through the teaching from the pulpit and through the example. In other cases, it was one or two families that got involved with the foster system and a few other families joined in. And then a few others decided they would support those families. And it just kind of grew organically. But I think people can become paralyzed. They see these remarkable things in other churches, and they don't want to start because it's never going to feel as big or as good. So just, you know, taking those small steps, starting with prayer and working through the leadership of the church to the fullest extent you can. But in absence of that, taking very modest steps with a small group of others that share the passion with you. Mm-hmm.
So every time we get discouraged, we go back to just three or four. Mm. Or just one. Is it really? I mean, and so it keeps the focus. Yeah.
We've got a lot of couples here, several couples here anyway, who have one half of the couple here a little bit reluctantly. So that you have one person who really feels that God is calling them to adopt or to foster or some other kind of ministry, and someone else, the husband or the wife, in the couple isn't there yet, isn't sure. What kind of counsel would you give to those couples as they're thinking this through? How do you walk together toward this when one of you is there and one of you is not? I think there are probably several of us on this platform who were in that situation at one point in time. Well, what word of counsel would you give?
Don't take a step. Just pray. Because if you're not both on the same page, then you don't need to do it yet. Mm-hmm. Pray for your spouse or pray for, start praying for yourself. Lord, is this you've given me this desire? Is this how it's supposed to flesh out in our family? Because the Lord united you in marriage as one. So therefore, he doesn't want the potential of expanding your family through adoption to divide you. So I always advise, and David as well, we always tell couples that come to us, don't take another step ahead. You just continue praying because the Lord has the big picture. In his sovereignty, he already knows what your family is going to look like eventually. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to happen today. Hmm. And patience is a difficult thing. We often tell couples, the process of adoption or the process of determining to adopt or not is far more about the sanctification of you as an individual than it is about expanding your family or providing a home for an orphan. The mm-hmm. Lord has great things that he wants to do to grow you up. And through the process of waiting patiently, adoption is a difficult process. There are a lot of ups and downs. And if you're not both on the same page, it can cause a great deal of division in your marriage.
Mm-hmm. Good word.
I would encourage, not that I know it could be husband or wife, but regardless, I would encourage men, husbands in this room to, even if you're the one that's a little more reluctant, to still provide the spiritual leadership in this journey. Even if you're the one, you still have responsibility for spiritual leadership in your marriage. And so even if you're the one reluctant, it's not a passive reluctance. It needs to be an active seeking after God, even for you in that. That doesn't mean that, okay, well, now that you start seeking after God, adoption will automatically happen. But I think we need to be careful as husbands never to abdicate that spiritual leadership process, regardless of where we are on a certain issue.
Good work.
If both couples can commit, or both man and woman both commit to listen and to love, and not predetermining what the response is going to be, but Scripture speaks about how quickly we speak and how we need to be more quick to listen and slow to speak, and just to love one another, to really listen to what the other person is saying, whether it's for adoption or against adoption, not be so quick to give our responses or our perspective, but to be good listeners and to be good lovers in the sense of loving our neighbor, our nearest neighbor being our spouse, and really seeking for the common good and determining we as a married couple want to do whatever would most glorify God and would please the Spirit and consecrate that to Him and leave that ultimately in His hands. And going back to the earlier point, it's only God who's going to be able to change your spouse's heart.
You know, and even while you would never want to take a step into adoption unless both of your hearts are 100% there, there are things that you can step into during that season of waiting. You know, you can, if there's an adoptive family in the church, you can babysit their kids.
Right.
You know, if you can, I know Loki here in town is starting a mentoring program for young foster women who are mothers as teens, right? And, you know, becoming a mentor for one of those young women, it may lead you towards adopting a foster youth. It actually may not, and you may spend the rest of your life serving teen mothers, you know, and what a beautiful thing.
And I think whether or not, you know, if you're the reluctant one, I think the issue in your reluctancy does not negate a heart for adoption. You are responsible, particularly as a husband, to have a heart for adoption, whether or not that is, whether you can discern whether that's God's will for your family now. Mm-hmm. But you must lead with a heart for adoption, whether it's your family adopting, or as Jed said, serving other families in the adoption process.
A couple who asked about, they have a biological child right now. Lord's calling them to adopt, and they are starting the process of thinking through adoption. And they're asking, how do they talk to their child, their biological child now? What would be some counsel that you would give to them as to how to prepare that biological child for what's happening? What counsel would you give? Mary Dell, you look like you're about to say something.
How did I do that? And so long ago, I don't know. I think there was already an anticipation in our case at that point in time. The crisis of abortion was a lot of conversation in our family about how do we as a family exhibit a pro-life mentality and live it out. And so even our 5 and 6-year-old was able to say, man, if a woman's in crisis, can't we help her? So already there was, you know, heart of compassion and nurturing. And so it seemed really quite normal that we were going to add to our family this way as well as any other way. And I think the key is that children would know that this is also one of the ways that God builds a family. Mm-hmm. That this is part, this isn't plan B. This is part of how He does it. And isn't it amazing that He would choose and pick and plan from other parts of the world or right here in our own community to build our family that way?
Mm-hmm.
So
we adopted first and then had a biological child. But one of the things, and I think this is applicable to this question, but one of the things that I've been amazed by I've really seen in our children is that they get adoption.
Mm-hmm.
We talk openly, like Maridel talked about, and we talk openly about adoption. We talk openly about children around the world who don't have mommies and daddies, and we talk about children that don't have food. That's just mealtimes are just a natural opportunity to talk as we pray and as we pray for our meal to recognize, well, there's kids that don't have meals and don't have families. And so our kids I'm consistently reminded through their prayers and their interactions that they get that, they pick that up. Mm-hmm. Their heart is really to jump on it, because we're you know, consistently praying about, you know, maybe adopting again. And our kids are almost, you know, more there than we are You know, they're ready for another brother and sister. They want more. Mm-hmm. And so I think don't underestimate what your children understand, and let them join you in that process of discerning God's will. Encourage them to pray about it.
It's a beautiful thing to now have adult children and watch the cycle complete itself. And that my daughter, before she married this man, it was like, well, part of our plan is adoption. I mean, it's a normal thing in our family. And so for them, it was like, we birth two and we adopt two. It was just seemed like the natural way. And so that was a beautiful picture to see. Just that's the way you do life. Not,
I think if you have young children, you prepare your biological child just like you would if you were going to birth a child. We're going to have a new baby in the house, and not that they always get it, but it's just another, you know, expansion of your family. For our family, we brought home kids that were a little bit older. Our daughter was 7 when she came home, and our son was almost 6 when he came home. But we had been around a couple of adoptive families, and our kids who were younger, our oldest was 9 at the time, came and said, hey, we know that Abby and Brent were not born from their mom's tummy, and there are 2 boys in our family, and we have 1 girl, and we know you can get us a sister, and so we want one. And so they kind of began the process with that, but because they had been around and exposed to, you know, just the plight of the orphan, they knew that there were kids out there that needed families, and that we had a great thing going on at our house, and that we ought to just get on the ball. So, you know, there still had to be some prep. When our daughter came home, you know, with our the daughter closest in age, obviously there was a little bit of sibling rivalry, and she's touching my stuff, she's in my space, and I can remember calling my sister and saying, is this adoption thing or is this a sister thing, you think? And she said, well, we fought like crazy, so I think it's a sister thing. But when we brought our son home, the son closest in age to him had the biggest struggle. But it was more sibling rivalry kind of things initially. But there was never a time that they were not excited about a new sibling in our family. But I just think preparing them for, you know, they're... People are going to ask, especially if you're adopting transracially, people are going to ask about your brother or sister because they look differently than mom and dad, and so they might stop us and ask. One of our sons said one time, someone stopped us yet again and asked about our Filipino daughter, and he said, Mom, in front of Mary Tess and like whoever was asking the question, he said, why do people always ask about her? She's really not that special. And so we said, yes, dear, we know, but you're all special. But they're just asking us about her because we look different than, you know, some other families. And so just always preparing them and helping train and guide them along the way to have words to say to respond to people who ask them questions.
One little thing is we just would work adoption into bedtime stories sometimes. And, you know, just our daughters were 2 and 4 at the time. And so it was just very natural. And the prince and princess decided that they would adopt a little baby that, you know, didn't have a mother and father. And it was just even, you know, the weeks after the stories, you'd observe my little girls playing. And one of them would say, I'm a baby and I want you to adopt me. And, you know, and they'd adopt each other and just different things. And it was really neat.
I think that's a good word there, too, for even if a couple is not even at this point preparing or planning to adopt, to still talk about adoption like it's a great thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a good picture of God's love for us, how it is a natural thing to point out other children that are adopted and what that means. Like, I think that is really healthy to build in from the beginning, because there's so much to unpack if we wait so early to talk like that. Even before we have firm plans to adopt, it's still a healthy thing to talk about with our children.
Someone wrote in and said that she and her husband are thinking about and praying about foster care, but she's a little bit scared of foster care because it's not a very permanent situation, and she's afraid of getting very attached to the children or the children getting very attached to them, and is kind of wondering how traumatic is this going to be for all of us, and how do we navigate that? What kind of counsel would you give to somebody who's praying about foster care, who just wants to know, what am I getting into? David, you all have a lot of foster care in your church.
I think it's an excellent question, because I think that needs to be acknowledged from the very beginning, mm-hmm. because the goal of foster care is certainly not always adoption. In fact, the win is when a child who is in the foster care system is united in a healthy way with their mom or dad who has birthed them biologically. Mm-hmm. I mean, the goal is that we have a healthy, strong family, and that you're serving that process. Mm-hmm. And there's some situations, obviously, where that doesn't happen. And so to be aware of that from the very beginning, and to, I think there's certainly, as we've been walking our folks through this process, a guarding of your heart that does have to happen during that time. But at the same time, to feel free to pour out love, and right, this child needs that. Mm-hmm. The families that we have kind of platformed in this process who have done foster care for years, I think have expressed and encouraged others with a healthy acknowledgement of exactly what you're asking about, and a recognition of there's beauty in even short-term ministry to mm-hmm. children who are in need. And so to look for, recognize, and appreciate that beauty, it is different than adoption.
Any other word on that with foster care? What about families who say, I just am afraid we're going to get in the situation and I won't know what to do. I've got a really, perhaps a really rebellious foster child in the home who's not responding to me, and it's a very temporary situation. I just don't know what I will do if I get into that situation. What would you counsel that person to start thinking about and preparing for now?
I think ahead of time, having resources available that you know of ahead of time, so mm-hmm. that if you happen to get in the middle of that situation, that you're not floundering to wonder where to turn. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes couples that are within your church or within your community that are doing foster care well and can provide counsel to these couples and come alongside, because they do know the unique situations that they might encounter. I think pairing those couples together is a wonderful thing, making sure that they've been educated as much as possible on the front end, but just making sure you have your resources before any child ever comes to your home, so that when you get in a situation that you just don't know what to do, that you know who to call.
Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful opportunity to engage the body of Christ at number of levels, whether it's you becoming, you know, that respite for that family mm-hmm. who's taking that kind of challenge, or being the person who drives to the grocery store for them, as little as, you know, taking their own birth children so they can bring this child to the many, many places they need to go. It's such a beautiful expression of the body being able to work together and come around and wrap around that family. It gets you closer to the experience without actually being a foster parent. You can taste and feel and get to know what that experience is like. And as my little 9-year-old said so well, he said, "Mama, wouldn't it be better to know her and love her for just a day than to never have known her and loved her at all?" Mm. Yeah.
Good word. Someone wrote in and asked about, given the recent news, he asks, how can I safeguard from participating in child trafficking in my adoption journey? And when you see some of the problematic issues that have come up in the news, how do you know? When you're doing something, I mean, no one wants to start an adoption journey that turns out to be an ethical problem. We actually want to adopt orphans into families, not children who aren't orphans, and certainly not to contribute to some wicked things that are happening to children around the world. So how do we safeguard that when you're not an expert in foreign policy and everything that's happening all around the world? What would your words of counsel be?
I think the best thing you can do is to choose a reputable adoption agency, one that has a history of doing good work in the particular country that they're that you're adopting from. So doing your homework in terms of the agency you choose, I think, is one of the first things to guard yourself from being finding yourself in that kind of position. And I think there's plenty of great adoption agencies out there that really do a good job of trying to guard against child trafficking, and they, you know, they want to be above board. They want to honor God in all that they're doing. They really are seeking the best interests of the children. So look for those agencies, I would say.
other things.
I think, too, not to get frustrated with the process. It is very frustrating, all the paperwork you have to do and all the hoops you seem to have to jump through in order to adopt. But those things were set in place, those regulations, for a purpose, to mm-hmm. protect the child. And remember, mm-hmm. this is not all about you. So recognizing that all of these regulations are in place for a reason, and embracing that the Lord will have your child in your home when he sees fit, and appreciating the fact that they are guarding against those things, because that would just be a horrific thing to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm. What are some things that we need to be doing as Christians when it comes to ministering not just to orphans around the world right now, but to keep orphans from being orphaned? What are some things that need to be going on in North America and all around the world to make sure that we're kind of on the front end of the orphan crisis, not just on the back end?
Well, yes, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Well, just briefly, I think, I mean, certainly one of the, you know, the central issues is in many of the developing countries where adoption is happening is just extreme poverty. And you know, these are deep waters we're talking about. I mean, I think it merits a very long conversation. But the, you know, the fundamental issue is that there are some cases where parents give up their children, and they could keep them if they had just a bit more modest means. And you know, that's, again, very complex. And sometimes that child may end up in an orphanage, and if they're not adopted, they will spend 15, 20 years in an institution. And so it's not necessarily a clear-cut situation every time. But, you know, I at least personally believe very strongly that we should have a passion for helping families stay together, if at all possible, here in the United States and in other countries. And, you know, things like there's just so many tremendous Christian microfinance organizations that help, you know, help, say, a single mom to make a little bit more money so she can mm-hmm. feed her family, or a host of other things like that. And I think mm-hmm. that anyone who's passionate for the cause of orphans and adoption, not that we're called to do everything, each of us has a focus, but ultimately we should have a real heart for that alongside mm-hmm. a heart for adoption when it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I, as a pastor, I think, well, fundamentally on a regular basis, it certainly starts with prioritizing the biblical model of family and not giving away gospel ground there. Mm-hmm. And then, I think about inner city Birmingham, which is where we see a lot of orphan-creating situations, fatherless situations for sure. We have to have a presence in mm-hmm. communities like that, where we are coming alongside these single moms, where we are equipping them, walking alongside, serving alongside them, and empowering them to do what God has uniquely gifted them to do. And I think if we keep an arm's distance from communities that can be more dangerous or threatening, I think we will end up contributing to the problem that we're trying to help. And so we've got to be hands-on in that process, and even around the world as well. Like to go to India, and many times, infanticide that Jed mentioned, I mean, is still a reality in contexts like that. And many times because they can't afford to, and I'm not saying it's anyway justified, but to be able to be intentional about coming alongside, and it's a wonderful thing to look in the eyes of moms whose children might not otherwise be alive and see them holding a healthy baby mm-hmm. Because the church has come alongside them. This is a good thing that we need to give ourselves to.
I think domestically, too, one of the things I've been struck with is the U.S. foster care system. There are 500,000 children in the U.S. foster care system. 130,000 of those are available for adoption today through the state, mm-hmm. and the statistics for the children, that I think it's something like 20,000 children age out of foster care every month, and the statistics for those children are just heartbreaking. I think less than 2% of them graduate from university, mm-hmm. And then the other stat that breaks my heart is that 84% of the girls that age out of foster care are pregnant within the first 2 years of aging out. And I think there's a systemic cycle going on. And I know there's statistics on how many foster children are children of former foster children. And I think we have a real opportunity as the church to particularly come alongside our state and counties and care for these foster children and then these children that are available for adoption. I can't help but wonder what would happen if the church in every city and every county really said, let's care for these children, let's adopt these children, and what that would do to that cycle that I think is just perpetuating. If we brought those children into our home, and you know, even just temporary foster care, how bringing those children into our churches, what that might do to change their lives as they come in contact with the gospel and a sense of permanency in our families. I think there's something there that we need to pray hard about and really consider in terms of looking forward and answering as a solution to how do we prevent this cycle from continuing.
Any final words of counsel for the folks that are here praying and thinking through where God would take them next with orphan ministry for many of you?
I think your involvement in this conference is huge. I think to explore these possibilities, to walk through the journey together as a couple, as in preparation for marriage, to be thinking about this, wherever you find yourself on the journey, I'm just encouraged by your willingness and desire to be a part of this and walk this journey. And God is gracious. He wants this journey to reveal His character more to you and to the people around you, and maybe to a child that God entrusts to you. And so there's nothing but good in this journey. In the end, it's difficult and painstaking at times, but it is a good journey. So press on.
This may sound like a strange word, but evangelicals have a temptation to make good things into ultimate things. And adoption is a very good thing, but just be cautious not to make adoption an idol, to make your ministry of adoption, your practice of adoption into an idol, that our spiritual adoption is for the purpose of bringing us into relationship with the Father, and our act of physical adoption is to show a picture of the gospel and to meet needs of people. But like anything, we can become more excited about a ministry than about God Himself in the presence of Christ. So just not to denigrate anything that anybody has said, but it's just a cautious warning for all of us, no matter what sort of ministries we're involved in, let's make God the one we're ultimately worshiping and not anything, any gifts that He's given us.
Any other word you might have?